commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at kfarradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I am your host, David Pruse. If you have a question for me and my guest today, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. With that, today's a Wednesday, and we finally have Nick Nugent in. Now, Fairbanks, he's always in on the second Wednesday, but I had a conflict of schedule last week, so I moved him to Friday. And then he gave me a call Friday morning, and he wasn't feeling well, so we moved him back to Wednesday, but this one Wednesday off. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Sorry for throwing you through the ringer, but that's what happens on radio.
It keeps my life exciting. I get to use my daytimer.
Now, we've been, you know, I've really been looking forward to this one, but I have to let Fairbanks know this is a two-part series.
At least.
Yeah. Well, maybe a three-peat, who knows. But it's on the Wien early aviation from 1924 through 1930.
That's great.
There's a lot more, so we're going to come back probably in May or June and do the second half and maybe even a supplemental third portion depending on how much time you need because you really thoroughly investigated them. You're a stalker.
Well, thank you, but there's a lot of good information out. There are books that were written from being contemporary, 1925. Noel was first mentioned in a local book. Mm-hmm. And then there are a number of other really good aviation books, some of which give you an almost blow-by-blow, day-by-day history of what was going on.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the best thing is just to look at all of the different Wiens that were involved. The story of the Wiens is positively one of a flying family. Noel, Fritz, Ralph, and Sigurd all combined to pioneer and then advance aviation in Alaska from the use of open biplanes to the jet age. To most casual and recent, maybe, aviation fans, only Noel is very well known. That's the name you kind of automatically think of here in Fairbanks. Well, the brothers were born as follows. Ralph in 1897, lived to 1930. Noel, 1899 to 1977. Fritz, 1901 to 1975. And Sig, 1903 to 1994. They were born in Wisconsin, but the family moved to northern Minnesota in 1905. In Ira Harkey's book, he said that was to get away from the rowdy times in the Wisconsin town of Lake Nebegamon, which was a little logging town, apparently kind of rough. Noel had the earliest interest in aviation and automobiles of the brothers. And at 17, Noel took his first job off the farm as a raker for the county road department. He was able to move up and was soon a truck driver at $2.50 a day. Knowing people who have worked in that same era that I've talked to that did farm work, they were happy to get 50 cents a day in meals.
I was going to say, you know, that's, wow.
So he was able to save about $800, which was a considerable sum then.
Mm-hmm.
And for his 21st birthday, he bought a 1920 Overland touring car. He was well known for taking very good care of it, not being the guy that ended up skidding over on the roof from going around corners too fast. Sort of a pattern that we see Noel had for the rest of his life. Unfortunately, the job ran out, and Noel left the car with his brother Ralph to sell. He went to Duluth to seek work. He found work in a harness factory and sadly dropped back to $1.50 a day, which I'm sure working in Duluth with the costs, and that much of a decrease was a very large decrease. Well, Ralph was able to get $700 for his car, and with this money, Noel moved to Minneapolis to attend the William Wood Dunwoody Institute, which was a mechanics institute, if you will.
They didn't have an aviation program, did they?
They did not.
Okay.
And so he found that out, and he entered the automobile mechanics course as a stopgap. While attending an auto show there, he saw the brand new Curtiss OX5 aero motor, and he noticed from the builder's plate that the company wasn't very far away. So he ran out, jumped on a streetcar, went to the end of the line, and walked the last mile out to the airport. And
he was walking to destiny.
He
was walking to destiny right
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So he met Major Ray S. Miller, a friend to Billy Mitchell and an early warfare, aerial warfare theoretician. He told the major about the money coming, and the major quoted $40 per hour and 8 hours to learn. 8 hours, that's kind of mind-boggling. That's not even a day shift, if you think about it.
But $40 an hour at that time.
That was a lot of money to come up with.
You know, when I first saw that, that's staggering. Oh. You have to make, you know, he walks the final mile, and he's made the commitment, and there's no going back. Even at $40 an hour, let's do this.
Yep. Yeah, and went on. He was offered an orientation flight for $10, which he went for. After the flight, Noel is quoted as saying that he knew what he wanted to do for the rest of his life. It was May 6th, 1921. Noel began instruction, worked with all four instructors at Curtiss Southwest or Northwest, and they used a JN4 with the OX5 90 horsepower engine. I had a snow machine once, had that much horsepower.
I was just thinking that. Oh, my goodness. I better call Compo.
So James Rodabaugh becomes involved in the Ween story as he hired Noel to fly for his Alaska Aerial Transport Company. In 1924, Rodabaugh was a 15-year resident of Fairbanks, and he was the chief conductor on the Alaska Railroad. He'd owned a sawmill and done quite well trading furs along the rail belt. Got interested in aviation, took a few lessons, but decided to own an aviation company rather than actually fly one. Apparently, he thought the trains must have been a bit safer bet. Well, they went to Robbinsdale, Minnesota, and there was a manufacturer there that took surplus JN4 and J1 aircraft, modified them into better performers. Part of that conversion was to add the Hispano-Suecia 150 horsepower engine. So they're built from surplus parts, and a lot of these planes actually got to their owner still in military colors. They didn't even bother to repaint them.
Oh, goodness.
Noel then met Rodabaugh there. Rodabaugh offered he and Art Sampson flying positions at $300 per month. Rodabaugh had bought two standards, and he, Sampson, and Bill Yunker, their mechanic, came north with the first plane, arrived in Fairbanks April 13th, 1924. They set to work, made several flights to Brooks, or Live and Good. We find that was a very popular destination here in this part of the 20s.
But April 13th, 1924 is when Noel Ween arrived in Fairbanks.
That's correct. No, I'm sorry, he did not. That's when the first aircraft arrived.
Okay, okay. Yeah,
coming back to Noel, Noel arrived in Seward with the second aircraft.
Okay.
It was unloaded, and assembled in Anchorage on June 26th, the first flight on the 27th, which really, I find it remarkable how quickly they got these crated airplanes up in the air.
You know, what always got me about studying this is how they were one-third mechanic, two-thirds pilot.
Yes.
And then you throw navigation by line of sight in there.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why you could learn to fly quickly. There weren't many things to look at inside the cockpit.
No, there weren't.
Well, Noel circled the city around 2,000 feet, which certainly got a lot of attention flying around town early flight there. They did several flights, including the first to take aerial photos of Anchorage, which abruptly ended when the photographer accidentally dropped his lens over the side.
Those stupid artists.
So that was July 1st, 1924.
The first bombing run on Anchorage.
There you go. So through the 4th of July of 24, they made $1,700 from 65 flights. So their mechanic, Yunker, had come to Anchorage, and he and Noel departed Anchorage for Fairbanks on July 15th. They had 5 hours of fuel on board and expected the flight to last 4.5 hours. Departure time was 2:30 a.m. for better air. They proceeded along following the railroad past the Alaska Range. Over the Tananaw Flats, they ran into increasing smoke from a huge wildfire which was burning up in the Tolovana area. They had to stay below 100 feet to see any landmarks. They finally spotted Weeks Field and landed at 7:20, which, if you add the time, shows they had about 10 minutes worth of fuel left.
Fairbanks, we have arrival. And what day was that again? July 15th,
yes.
Okay, 1924. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. And again, this is only the first part of this series. This is for the Ween Airlines from 1924 to 1930. We'll probably be doing another extended series on this in May, and then maybe some follow-up in June or July to close out the extensive history of the Ween family here in Fairbanks. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center provides free, confidential pregnancy tests to any woman in need. But they offer so much more to women, men, and families. By participating in one-on-one parenting classes selected by you, you can take advantage of Earn While You Learn, earning valuable credit to spend on children's items and clothing in Maria's Boutique. The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center. Call 907-455-8255 or visit online findoutfree.com. Findoutfree.com.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs. Starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m. The Buzz at 11:30. A look at Alaska's budding new industry brought to you by the Tananaw Herb Company. Followed by Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical at noon. The Compos Outdoor Show at 12:30. And later, it's Fairbanks Foodies at 5:30 p.m. To kick off our Saturday night food programming. Weekends just got local with KFAR Radio.
Could you use $5,000? Then join the Alaska Danics Department of Athletics at the USABELI Coal Mine Gold Rush Reverse Raffle at the Alaska Airlines Gymnasium at the Patty Center Saturday, March 25th. Along with possibly winning $5,000, there'll be silent and live auctions and other giveaways. Individual tickets and tables are available for purchase. For more information, contact the Nanux Ticket Office at 907-474-6665 or online at alaskananux.com. Support your Alaska Danics Saturday, March 25th at the USABELI Coal Mine Gold Rush Reverse Raffle.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
A blend of clouds and sun today with daytime highs approaching 36. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly cloudy skies expected tonight. Lows dip down to about 16. Cloudy skies tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 29. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, I'm back in studio here with Nick Nugent. We're discussing 1924 to 1930, Ween Air Alaska, Ween Airlines. Now, it's interesting, they're just landing at Weeks Field. Mm-hmm. And last week, one of the surveyors down at the city showed me all these, you know, old maps, not maps, but surveys of the city. And one of them was Weeks Field and how it was laid out. I mean, the survey of it. And basically, it started at the where Barnett Street is, and quite wide, and it went over to where Groudon Field is. And you saw where the airline hangars were. And the biggest one was Ween. one big one. Then the Alaska Airlines had like three smaller ones.
Right.
and the Alaska Airlines ones were separated. There were, the three different hangars and other buildings in between them. But what I'm doing is I'm having that framed, and I'll hang that up in the hallways on the second floor.
That would be very nice.
Yeah, just, old Fairbanks. And there you're going to see the Wien airline hangar.
One of the things that's interesting is when Noel got here, it was actually Exhibition Field, and they landed by the racetrack that was there. Weeks came later. So it's really according at this time to which author you read what your name you'll see. Weeks is the easiest to remember, but mm-hmm. Weeks was slightly offside. The second field was built on part of the Rickert homestead.
Yeah.
And was
at least for
a while referred to as Rickert Field.
Okay. Yeah, you can see how it went over there.
Mm-hmm. There was a north-south component there.
Yeah, it went on both sides, but then it went totally dominated on with Weeks Field side.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Noel then lived in a little cabin with the other pilot, Samson, and it was here on Lacey Street, probably I didn't find an address, but he was within a block of where we're sitting right now. So that's kind of interesting to know. Most of their passengers in these days were businessmen, mine owners, employees of the Alaska Road Commission, who went out to investigate airfields, road sites, so forth. A lot of his early flights were very local to Tullavanna, Chena Hot Springs. He flew a new destination up to Caribou Creek off the Sulcha, carried freight, especially fresh food items. Vegetables were welcome. He also made a fair number of flights to mining areas, taking one of Sampson Hardware's mechanics. And they ended up getting a pretty good deal going, flying mechanics in so that the mines wouldn't be held up.
That was probably after James Barrick probably passed away. James Barrick passed away in 1950. He owned Sampson Hardware. His brother, John, passed away about 1910. And James was the mayor of Fairbanks from 1907 to 1908.
Okay.
Yeah, those things that I know.
Well, he made a first flight then to Circle City with a U.S. Bureau of Mines engineer. They went on to Eagle, planning on landing on the old Fort Egbert parade grounds, but found it so covered with junk they couldn't. They were able to land on a beach on Belle Isle and crossed over to town. On the return trip to Fairbanks, August 16th, he noted that many of the hills were snow-covered, some nearly to their bases. So August 16th and the hills are covered with snow already.
I like global warming.
There's times I do also.
Yes.
Well, the flights in those days weren't given that you could either leave when you wanted to or especially get back when you cared to. Noel now at this point was the only pilot for AATC, and Eielson and Bill Junker departed for the winter. He was the only pilot in town. With Junker's departure, the aircraft suffered from a lack of care. One flight to Kantishna took 7 tries due to mechanical issues. He did, though, in that, make his first flight to McGrath on September 30th, 1924, 5 hours, 20 minutes. And so he left on September 30th, but he was held by weather and didn't return to Fairbanks until October 6th. And that flight was dogged by snow all the way from Lake Minchumina to Fairbanks.
It's interesting, a family man or families who are pilots, when they took off, I'll see you tomorrow or maybe not.
Yeah, one of these
maybe
days.
Maybe next week.
Occasionally, when I've looked at these very carefully, a few of the flights, the round trip component, because getting held by weather,
mm-hmm.
the part where you're removing was quick. But the actual overall transportation wasn't much better than the dog sled.
Yeah. That's our secret.
Yeah. So the last flight of the season was an attempt to reach Wiseman. They returned back by heavy snow, about 50 miles short. Noel landed at Brooks, or Life and Good. He was suffering from the cold so badly he had to be helped out of his airplane and warmed up. And During that winter, the Farthest North Airplane Company merged with Alaska Aerial Transport Company to form the Fairbanks Airplane Corporation. They announced James Rodabaugh as manager and Ween as director of flying. Art Sampson and Bill Yunker never returned to Alaska. Both had very successful careers outside, with Yunker rising to chief mechanic for American Airlines. Noel was outside then, at this time, negotiating for a new aircraft when the Nome diphtheria epidemic struck. The lack of a qualified pilot and weather conditions basically left the job of serum delivery to the mushers. So that's why we don't see much in that history about airplanes being used. Flying drew to a close in 1924. The standard used by Eielson was in storage, and the second was kept in readiness, which basically meant someone swept the snow off the wings now and then. Noel...
What a pit crew.
Exactly. Noel had left Alaska on October 22nd, planning to return by March 1st. In this brief time, he'd made 34 trips, 24 to Livengood and 10 to such places as Circle City, Circle Hot Springs, Chena Hot Springs, Eagle, and McGrath. The flights has added up to 139 flying hours. He stopped in Omaha on his way out to visit family while he was looking for a new aircraft and talked to the government about renewing the airmail contract. The government, while he was still out, before he came back, announced that they would be accepting bids for new airmail service, which would commence around July 1st, 1925. The preferred aircraft would have been an air-cooled engine with an enclosed cabin. Well, they were just a bit early. The Wright Whirlwind with 9 cylinders, which revolutionized flying, was available, but nobody had yet built an airframe which could take its power. Noel was directed to the Atlantic Airplane Corporation, where he met Anthony Fokker. Fokker is a Dutch engineer who had designed some of Germany's best aircraft in World War I. The aircraft that Noel came to look at was the Fokker F-3, which is a refinement of their first commercial plane. It had a 240-horsepower BMW engine, could carry 1,200 pounds to include 5 passengers and freight when pilot. Pilot sat in an open cockpit, but he was next to the large motor and radiator, which kept him comfortably warm. It could land at a speed of only 35 to 40 knots, but due to having no brakes, which was common in those days, it had a runout of about 1,000 feet. The plane was purchased on March the 6th, 1925, for $9,500 and was shipped to Alaska by way of the Panama Canal. Noel had been asked to find a mechanic at a rate of $200 a month, and brother Ralph, who was a graduate of the Sweeney Auto School, jumped at the chance to head north. Ralph's wife Julia would follow after Ralph had a place in Fairbanks. After arriving back in Fairbanks, April 21st, the brothers started putting the 3 existing aircraft, the Standards and the Jenny, all into airworthy condition after this period of neglect and storage. Well, the first flight of the season then took place on May 3rd to Beaver with 1 passenger. They were ready for another flight to Wiseman. Wiseman now had a government radio station. They were able to report weather, and they could mark the airfield with smudge pots when the aircraft was due. Flight time was estimated at 3 hours, with Livengood to be used as a navigational fix. The flight was set for May 5th.
Okay. Fairbanks, what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break for some bumper music. It's the Doors, whatever Peace Frog is. I have no idea. But once I hear it, I might remember back to my youth. I was never a Doors fan. Just wasn't. Then we're going to go into some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, some weather, and then we'll be back. And remember, this is the first phase of Ween Air Alaska, Ween Airlines in Alaska. We'll be back after these messages.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Two school administrators were shot at a Denver high school this morning after a handgun was found during a search of a student.
One is currently in serious but stable condition. The other is currently in surgery, listed in critical condition.
Denver Police Chief Ron Thomas says a search continues for the juvenile suspect, and he says the gun was not immediately recovered following the shooting at East High School. The Federal Reserve today, after a two-day meeting, announcing a quarter-point hike in its benchmark interest rate, with board members weighing the fight against inflation against the current banking crisis.
Fed officials slowed their pace of rate hikes in early February, boosting them a quarter point to a range of between 4.5% and 4.75%, extending the fastest series of rate increases since the early 80s.
Fox's Hillary Barsky. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Department of Justice has filed a petition with the U.S. Supreme Court to seek a review of a lower court decision that struck down a federal law that banned people under domestic violence restraining orders from owning firearms. A three-judge panel of the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled last month that people under domestic violence restraining orders retain their constitutional right to own firearms, finding that the federal law prohibiting them from doing so was unconstitutional under the Supreme Court's landmark New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. versus Bruin decision. Attorney General Merrick Garland had promised to seek further review of the Fifth Circuit's decision. In the petition, the Justice Department argues that there is a legal tradition in the U.S. and England of disarming people who have posed a danger to the community or threatened to hurt others. In keeping with that history, this court explained in Heller that the right to keep and bear arms belongs only to law-abiding responsible citizens. DOJ Roe arguing that the federal law in question fits separately within the long-standing tradition of disarming dangerous individuals.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
At Batteries Plus, they do more than fix phones and tablets. They help our neighbors power their lives. Visit Batteries Plus in-store, curbside, and online at batteriesplus.com.
Hi there, this is Doug Johnson with Johnson & Associates. I've been a personal injury attorney in Alaska for 28 years, and during that time, I've been privileged to represent clients everywhere across our state, from Barrow to Ketchikan, and pretty much everywhere in between. My friend Ward Mertes has retired, and Johnson & Associates is now here in Fairbanks to continue the tradition of excellent service to Interior Alaska. Thank you for your service, Ward, and best of luck. Johnson & Associates, you hope you never need us, but we're here if you do.
Make quick work of firewood cutting and debris clearing in cold weather with your Husqvarna Professional Grade Chainsaw from The Woodway. The Woodway technicians will make sure your Husqvarna chainsaw is set for cold weather operation and that you're running low temp bar oil for optimal performance. See the whole line of Husqvarna chainsaws with features such as heated handlebars. Your Husqvarna is waiting for you to pick it up today at The Woodway. Living life the Alaskan way. The right way. The Woodway.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. It's a Wednesday. I have Nick Nugent in the studio with me. We're going to take a phone call real fast. Good morning, you're on KFAR Radio, and your name is? Good morning, you're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Good morning, my name is Eve, and if I may I help you guys pronounce the name of the Dutch airplane maker the correct way. I know all of you have trouble with that name.
Go ahead, Eve. I was waiting for this phone call.
It is Fokker. Yeah, like a very short as in TikTok. Fokker.
Fokker.
It is scary, but that's what it is. Fokker, not Fokker or anything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Eve. I think we're trying to avoid another way to pronounce that.
When we're off the air, I'll tell you a joke that uses that.
Okay.
Anyway, they made it to Wiseman. On the way back, runs into really unexpected winds, blew him off course. He spotted Rampart after 3.5 hours, chose to land and add more fuel. The fuel, though, was actually for motorboats. So when he took off again, he didn't have the right specific gravity fuel, so the motor would have been performing at a much
lower rate.
Well, He set off for Livengood, and he encountered even worse winds and decided to try for Nenana, but was blown over the Tolovana and made an emergency landing, damaging the landing gear. Well, with nothing else to do and a pretty good idea where he was, he set out for the Nenana Iditarod Trail, then on to Nenana. Arriving in Nenana, he had to wait to be spotted and then have some adventurous soul who was willing to cross the Nenana River, which was in breakup, to pick him up and bring him over to town. He eventually returned to Fairbanks on May 9th after having taken off on the 5th, and that after an extremely chilling ride on an open railroad gas speeder. During all this, pilot Ed Young had readied the JN-4 in case it was needed. While test flying it, he landed on a soft spot, nosed over, and cracked the prop. Ed and Noel went to recover the Standard, but on arriving, the Tolovana was in breakup, and they were forced to return. The pair took the train to Nenana and hired a boat to take them to the site. The river had dropped considerably, and they ended up walking in the final 20 miles. The aircraft was finally back in Fairbanks on May 19th. So imagine with all your mechanics equipment and everything you take, just hiking across country up in the Tolovana, which is not easy hiking country.
No, no.
And just to get your plane back. That's what went on.
You always hear me say this. They just don't make them like you used to.
That's for sure. Some flights through the end of May were canceled at the destination due to meltwater, standing on the fields, not being able to tell what you're actually looking at. On one flight to Caribou, Noel was unable to land, and he dropped the items he thought the miners would want most, which was their mail and a case of tobacco. Unfortunately, the tobacco case split open, hitting part of the aircraft, and bright red cans, probably Prince Albert, were strewn around the airstrip and mine site. By late May, all the fields had dried then, operations picked up. I returned from Livengood, the water pump, on a flight. The water pump failed. A forced landing was made again on Wickersham Dome, and Noel and his two passengers walked from Wickersham Dome to Alness, where they were able to catch the train into town. So Ween and Young flew back, repaired the aircraft, returned to Fairbanks. A lot of flights were mercy flights in those days, with injured or critically ill people being transported to Fairbanks for treatment. On one such flight, Cliff McClellan had hiked into Fairbanks all the way from Nome Creek to seek help for his partner, Charles Updike. They were able to bring him in, but only after replacing the prop, which was damaged on landing. Their longest flight in a single day took place May 27th. They departed Fairbanks to Nenana to Tanana, Manly, finally returning to Fairbanks. Well, the new aircraft arrived on June 2nd, and it was
what type of aircraft was that?
A German one.
Well, everyone remember Eve's pronunciation.
And they actually got it here in Fairbanks on the 2nd. That was a large aircraft when you see old pictures, and they had it test flown on the 3rd of June. The field that was in use at this time was Exhibition Field, a site of the racetrack, other events. It was really determined to be a bit too short, and a new 1,500-foot north-south runway was constructed on land provided by the Rickert Homestead, and that became their new home. The Fairbanks Airplane Corporation was ready to open a new route to Nome, and on June 6th, the Fairbanks Exploration Company chartered them to take Norman Steins and two co-workers to Nome at a cost of $1,500. They were planning on flying the 1920 route of the Alaska Flying Expedition to include a fueling stop at Ruby. The river was up. There was no place to land. Noel chose a cleared area on a nearby hillside, which turned out to be the town baseball field. Couldn't have been a very large place to land. Well, the plane nosed over, ended up on its back. Steins and his companions, interestingly, chose to finish the trip by steamer. The plane was righted and reached Nome on the 9th, landing at the Fort Davis parade grounds. Return was delayed due to weather and other issues until June 16th, and the return flight nonstop took 7 hours. Wiseman, McGrath, Fort Yukon all became very frequent destinations. At this time also, they picked up Elmer Acey, also better known as A.A. Bennett. He was hired and arrived on September 7th from San Diego. Fall and winter weather were coming. The start flying was slowing down. Weather caused frequent delays. One trip to McGrath took 5 days for the round trip. The Fairbanks Airplane Corporation did, in fact, have internal issues. Many stockholders were businessmen with no aviation experience, but still believed they should have management prerogatives. They often tried to pressure the pilots to fly when the pilot's judgment said no. Ralph was no longer the sole mechanic. There was concern about the quality of maintenance. Noel's last flight was November 14th, 1925, to Eagle. He was offended at this time by Bennett's tactics, and he was at odds with some of the stockholders. Both Noel and Ralph left the company. Ralph returned to his garage business and took a job as a fireman for the NC Company power plant. Noel left to return to Minnesota on December 18, 1925, and did not return till the spring of 1927. A lot of aviation events did take place during that time. Fairbanks Airplane Corporation acquired Joe Crossan as a pilot. Ben Eielson returned with the Detroit News Wilkins Expedition, which was going to fly from Barrow to Spitsbergen. On March 19th, Noel returned to Fairbanks after having spent time stunt flying. He had been in New York waiting to join another Arctic flight, which never came to pass. Coming with him was brother Fritz. They all moved into Ralph's house, and obviously they were pretty crowded. He talks about sleeping on the floor quite a bit in those days.
That's when they lived on Front Street.
Yes.
Okay. In Grail.
Yes.
A separate town or community.
Well, Noel was hired by Wilkins but released when Eielson damaged the airplane that Noel was supposed to be flying in support. Wilkins decided not to use it, but he found work as a truck driver and an oiler at the FE Company's Chattanooga Dredge. So in these early days, if you were a pilot, you ended up doing a lot of work in the in-between. It wasn't a guaranteed, here's your union card job.
Yes, or like a hunting guide.
Very much. Well, Ralph then kept his job with the, Noel met up with Harry Phillips of the Horseshoe Cigar Store, and Phillips loaned him $300 toward the purchase of the Fairbanks Airplane Corporation Standard, which was for sale at $750. Gene Miller arrived with a Hollywood film crew, put an additional $300 into the purchase. Noel and Ralph supplied the rest. The purchase was announced on May 10, 1927, with the stated purpose of producing educational aerial travelogues. Ralph wisely kept his job at the NC Company and spent a month working nights getting the Standard overhauled. At 5 p.m. on June 20th, Ween and Miller departed for Nome and landed at the Bessie Creek Gold Hill Airfield at 3 a.m. A lot of things were going on. During this same time, Crossan set an unofficial record of 14,600 feet while taking a photographer high enough to film the midnight sun. Ween focused on Nome at this time, and he had infrequent trips to Fairbanks. He did come back once with Miller and 75 pounds of mail in middle of August. Since he had last been in Fairbanks, he had flown 6,000 miles. Well, being able to use the income, Noel picked up work with Fairbanks Airplane Corporation while Crossan was outside picking up their new aircraft. While in Fairbanks, the Wilkins Group decided to sell a Stinson, surplus to their efforts, for $10,000. Noel and his partners had $3,500, and if they notified the merchants of Nome, That group, the No Merchants Association, went door to door and raised $6,000 to buy an airplane to be based in Nome. Wilkins deferred the final $500. The sale was completed on September 7th, and the new Ween Alaska Airways was in business.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
So how's your memory? Can you remember this name? It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. It's pretty simple, but it's a name you want to be familiar with. You see, good plumbers, plumbers who can get to your problem quickly and do a top quality job fixing it all at a reasonable price. Well, let's simply say they're scarce. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical is quick to the problem. They're quick to the solution. And when you have no heat, or you have a bad plumbing leak, your HVAC isn't working, or your pipes are frozen, you want your problem fixed. So who do you call? I told you to remember the name. It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Boilers and water heaters, snow melt systems, of course, drain cleaning. They also own Victory Drains. And you'd be surprised how much more. So look, you don't have to try to remember the phone number. Just remember the name and look it up from there. One more time now. Say it with me. Living Waters. Right. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Okay. Well done.
I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Watching those geese drop by. My, my, my. I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher.
Springtime is goose watch time, and that means the return of the geese to Kramer's Field is just around the corner. Win $500 in cash, courtesy of Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, just for guessing when the first flock of Canada geese arrives. Enter Goose Watch 2023 at Frontier Outfitters in the Govora Mall or Century Hardware in the North Pole Plaza Mall. If your guess is the closest to the official time and day, you win $500. Visit KFARradio.com for details and official rules. Must be 18 or older. Be a goose watcher and win $500 cash.
I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Here comes one now.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Maintaining your correct tire pressure improves safety, fuel economy, and tire life. Drop by the Tire Guys for free tire inflation. GCR Tires and Service, taming the Alaskan road. Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with daytime highs approaching 36. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, lows around 16. Overcast skies tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 29. Upper teens Friday with a chance for snow. Mid-teens, mainly cloudy skies expected Saturday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio here with me. We're probably not going to get through the entire presentation from 1924 to 1930, so, but we'll be back in June, May anyway, for sure, maybe June too, to wrap up everything. But on September 7th, 1924, Ween Alaska Airways started business.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, one of the more interesting things, I think, adventures maybe that Noel had happened about this time. He was on his way to Nome with a load of Christmas supplies. Was forced down at Lake Minchumina by weather. Left the plane parked in the snow on a small cove surrounded by trees. And turns out the wind changed, and the wind came up really hard, and he went out at 11 p.m., and the airplane was gone. And he couldn't find it, so the next day they got up when the storm had died down and found the plane was on the opposite shore. It had been blown clear across Lake Minchumina, which, you know, is a pretty good-sized lake. After delays for repairs and weather, he finally reached Nome on January 11th. They did a lot of flights on the Seward Peninsula. Many, many of them, of course, were firsts. In August, he met Bishop Peter Trimble Rowe of the Episcopal Church. Rowe had been in Alaska since 1895 and was finally to travel by air. They left Nome for Point Hope and took a refueling stop in Kotzebue. Other places were visited, and the flight was considered quite a success, as Roe covered in 3 days what would have taken a month or more by surface transportation. Conditions were getting better. The Alaska Road Commission was repairing and building fields. On January 4th, 1928, kind of an interesting event took place. Noel was taking a flight to Wiseman. Among the passengers were Mr. and Mrs. English and their young son, Billy. Billy was absolutely smitten with flying. He eventually became a jet captain and member of the board of directors of the subsequent company, Ween Alaska Airlines. So, there you see that a lot of Alaskan aviation stayed pretty close. People were happy to be here and happy to be working it. By mid-February, the newly reorganized Bennett Rotabaugh had their crews back, and on some days, Fairbanks was a pretty hopping destination. Noel picked up some money, taking stock footage for Wilkins and Eielson and their Lockheed Vega as they prepared for their transarctic flight. They also received good news. They received the airmail service contract, and that was to commence on April 16th, 28. Transportation of furs started to become a good part of their income, as they could deliver them in better shape than other methods. One flight, just locally, carried $10,000 worth of prime fur. They purchased a Waco number 3 from Bennett Rotabaugh, and it was going to be used for short local ski hops and to make teach his brothers to fly. Ralph had taken some lessons from Joe Crossan in 1926 and soloed in the JN-4, and they eventually made their first airmail flight on April 19th, the second one on May 7th. The Fox Film Corporation came up, and they sent a crew of 5, including Ray Wise, a native from the Nome area, who was a cinematographer. Ween received a contract for $6,000 to move the crew and equipment to Barrow. They needed 2 aircraft to take that amount of material, and he hired Russell Merrill of Anchorage. They decided to fly to Wiseman, hop over to Anituvik Pass, and then across the slope to Barrow. They left Wiseman on the 13th, and by May 19th, they still had not returned. They'd not been heard of. They were out of communication. There was not a radio station at Barrow that could reach back to Wiseman at this point. They proceeded along the Koval, ran into a lot of clouds, landed on a lake. Merrill's travel air was unable with the smaller tires to move through the snow. So Noel flew to Barrow, got food, supplies, shovels, and flew back. He couldn't find Merrill's aircraft. The North Slope was so uniform, no landmarks to pick out, and all the lakes looked alike, that he couldn't find him. And that went on for a while. Well, while that's going on, Ralph, with just 10 flying hours, was making plans to cover the airmail flight in the Waco. He departed on May 23rd, made stops in Nome, and returned to Fairbanks on the 29th. 2 weeks had passed since the film crew had been heard from, and Matt Nieminen, also of Anchorage Air Transport, had come north to help with the search. Noel flew at every chance he could, and on the 25th, he saw the travel air, which had been brought in by Matt. The film crew was not on site, nor was Merrill. With dwindling supplies, they had all set out for Barrow. Merrill had waited a bit longer, hoping to spot Ween, and knowing that would be a much safer and better way to go. Well, finally, the film crew was found 30 miles from Barrow after having walked 100 miles across the slope. June 4th, Merrill was brought in, and he was nearly dead. He was basically semi-conscious. He was brought in by a trader named Hedges. Merrill did not leave Barrow until July 4th, when Ralph and Noel went to pick up the second travel air, due to numerous weather delays. They did not reach Fairbanks till July 21st. And this was a fellow that's pretty ill. Turns out he was wasting away, kind of. And what had happened, as part of his ordeal on the slope, He had been shooting various rodents with a pistol he had and eating them raw. And he had Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which he might have died from had they not got him to Anchorage and on to Seattle for more care.
Wow.
Well, that was kind of the state of things again. There wasn't much of a support network. We talked about that when we talked about the Elisith and the other ships stuck in the ice over in Siberia. It was quite an effort to go look for anyone when they were this far north. So Fritz took flying lessons and soloed on November 21st of 28. Ralph's family had departed in September for the winter, and they had various flights and jobs they were doing. Ralph took the standard JN-1 to Nome and helped with the flying load, and plans were underway to build a hangar at Weeks Field to facilitate maintenance activities, especially on this new Hamilton monoplane, which would be the one that Eielson was killed flying. On December 13th, much of the operation moved to Fairbanks to the new hangar, though they continued to be based in Nome. At this time, there were 8 licensed pilots in the territory from student to transport. 6 were in Fairbanks, including the new Hamilton that Wien had purchased. There were 17 aircraft and 12 licensed mechanics, 9 of whom were in Fairbanks.
So Fairbanks was basically the...
It was the hub.
The capital of aviation.
Absolutely was the hub.
This is where we're going to stop. We have about 2 minutes left. My goodness. Yeah, we're not even through 1928 yet.
Well, Noel left for about a year.
Yeah.
And so the finish of 28 and then what happened in 1930 can be summed up fairly quickly. Ralph was killed taking off from Kotzebue in 1930, and he was flying a Belanca, which had, of all things, a diesel engine.
So the first member of the Wien brothers was killed.
Yes.
When does Sig come in?
Well, Sig comes in actually in 1930. He came back when Noel had been hired by the Fairbanks Aircraft Corporation.
Okay.
They did sell the Wien Airlines
to them.
To Eielson and his group, which was backed by American Airlines. That led to them getting an injunction against Ralph because he wasn't supposed to fly anything that competed with the new airline. So that's how Ralph ended up flying for the church and flying the Belanca that he was killed in.
Boy, one thing begots another. Very sad. Very sad. So... that was quite impressive, detailed, but that's how you are. That's how you are. Any plans this weekend?
Well, we'll have to see what's going. I'm hoping with getting ill last week, I haven't been to see the ice carvings yet. Hope to get over there.
You better get over there soon.
Yeah. You know, with a day like today, it's not going to be too long. So there won't be a lot to look at.
Yeah, I was over there about a week and a half ago, and it was enjoyable. Some very impressive ice carvings, as usual. Just very impressive what people can do with chainsaws, picks, axes, knives, sharpeners, chainsaws, and and not kill anyone.
I feel pretty good crushing ice for a martini, you know.
Yeah. But in April, we're going to have George Dalton.
Libby.
Well, Libby over here, we're talking about the Dalton Highway.
That's correct.
Okay. That should be fun.
I think so. It's Libby, an interesting story.
Yeah, Libby, she's sort of shy, so let's bring her out of her shell there.
I think once we get her started and she realizes she's not facing a crowd, she'll be good.
She'll want a repeat performance, too. Fairbanks, that is our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Nick, thank you very much for everything you do. And Fairbanks, I will see you on Friday.